The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, 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 what is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 510. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sup, people? How's it going? It's looking a little empty.
No, it's full, man. It's full. And we got Chris Seeley in the house.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Yeah. Shout out to the Twitch crew who joined us earlier. Yes, I forgot to turn the mic off. I'm glad we didn't say anything crazy and racist and shit. Like, you know, behind the scenes, Brett. You know, or who we may have voted for, you know. But yeah, as you may have already heard us talking, Carlos is in Denver right now. He's watching a basketball game. I'm assuming it's the Denver Nuggets. Richard Bailey Jr. is traveling back from LA. He was at a game preview, which I cannot tell you about yet, but he will tell you about it when he can. Brett, who knows? Brett of the Wild, he'll show up when he shows up, if he shows up. And Brian has to go to work early tomorrow. So it's just us three. The New York crew, you know?
Yeah, NYC.
Yeah, you already know. Oh, man. Here we go. These guys, you could already tell Richard Bailey Jr.'s sense of humor has infected the chat. Because they're like, I heard Tony secretly hates fighting games. Talking all that shit. I also heard some Richard, of you guys. What would he say?
Richard wouldn't say I hear.
I heard a rumor. I heard a, yeah.
Yeah, he would say.
That's what
no,
he would say.
Actually be like, I heard you like fighting games.
Yeah, actually, like, that's very interesting, Tony, because I heard you hate fighting games.
There you go. That's a Richard quote.
That's how Richard would say it. You know, I also heard some of you guys in the chat like Concord. You know, let me see them platinum trophies, man.
I heard some of you guys in chat are really big X-Files.
Oh. Oh, man. See, there you go. That's Richard's style right there. All right, man. We're back with another one. Before we start, there's a couple of things I want to run through. First of all, we had two questions that were, like, kind of related. They were still gaming questions, but they were related. You know, they were about the tariffs and shit. This is not the political down. We're not getting into that stuff. That's above our pay grade here, you know. Like I'm pretty confident Chris can do a pretty good job explaining the tariff situation, but we're not here to talk about fucking tariffs on a gaming podcast, you know. And then the other one is, we had two very hypothetical questions this week. Since we're gonna, even though it's only three of us, we're going through financials tonight, people. It's gonna be a stacked show, so I left them off. One of them we already kind of answered before, which was, how could Sega have survived until today, you know, with consoles? But I'm like, two hypothetical. The other one was like, you know, what if Nintendo and Sony didn't become enemies? Way too hypothetical. Not trying to get into that stuff. A couple other things here. I want to give a big shout out to Mr. Otaku Band 5000, Andre Tipton, who was joining us on the Thursday show. It was really good that he was there because we gave away a PS5 Pro to the other person I wanted to give a shout out to, Mr. J. Shep. You already know who is also joining us tonight in the chat. So thank you for, you know, you, J. Shep, and everybody else who joined. And of course, thank you guys for all the bits and super chats and all that other stuff that helped us afford that console, easily afford it, you know. So thank you for that. And we're already starting a fund for the PS6. Whenever that comes out, yeah. You know. So that's it, man. So shout out to everybody. Let's get into it. And, you know, segue kings here. First couple questions from Mr. J. Shep himself. He goes, first of all, thank you so much for the PS5 Pro giveaway. Words can't express how thankful I am. Thank you for the Throwdown fans for contributing to this great show. Yes, yes, yes. I'm really glad you got it, man, because you're, you know, we wanted that giveaway to be specifically for the hardcore guys. We didn't want these fly-by-night people coming in getting a console from us. We wanted to give it to you guys because it's you. You literally paid for it. Literally paid for it. You know, so yeah, shout out to Mob Bits making it rain, you know. Shout out to everybody, man. All right, first up, question here. I assume Nintendo's first-party games will attempt to take full advantage of the upcoming Switch 2. With that said, I assume their games will have bigger budgets as well. Do you think this will increase the importance of Nintendo's first-party games to be successful? And can you speak on the positives and negatives of Nintendo's developers having an increased budget? Chris, you could start with this one first. Do you think, like, because you know the trap, right? Bigger games, bigger budgets, longer development times. Do you think Nintendo is going to fall into that trap?
I don't think so. They're pretty frugal with both software and hardware. I mean, hardware, it's obvious, right? With the Switch. Yeah. I mean, Manny's mentioned that many times. They're always behind, way behind every other trend, right? Everyone else trying to make custom APUs and boards and all this stuff. Like, they're just trying to get the most out of the kind of the cheapest route they can. I don't think they'll never, I'll tell you this, they'll never staff up one of their studios to look anything like what Activision did with Destiny or even like a Rockstar level of stuff. They kind of keep things frugal. They have their segments, you know, they have Kyoto, they have Tokyo, and they have Canada, they have NTD in Canada, they have Retro. And I think their budgets are modest. They may increase with, you know, cost increase, so they may go up a little bit, but they're not going to get, you'll never hear, I would be highly shocked if you ever heard of Nintendo making a multi-hundred-million-dollar game or a half-a-billion-dollar budget for a game, right? That's not going to happen. There has been delays in their development, but that's not due to, I think, the scope of the project. I think they've had roadblocks. COVID was one of them, and you know they've had issues. But they try to keep things moving. So I think they would rather have smaller games that are higher quality, like they do with story and stuff. I'm not talking graphically, like story. They focus on that. They focus on experience and things like that. So they're smaller scope games. They could get them out faster. I don't think they'll ever bloat and reach, EA or Ubisoft levels of just like 8 years of slog development and, you know, to wind up with trash. Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up with this, like, and Jay Shep, since you're in the chat, you could correct me if I'm wrong. To me, it seems like the question assumes that now that Nintendo will have, you know, a console that's rumored to be as powerful as a PS4, that they're automatically going to make games to take full advantage of that. No, they're not. This is Nintendo. You're not suddenly going to get a photorealistic Super Mario World. That's not going to happen. These games are still going to look like Nintendo games. And also, as we mentioned before, you can't have this thing using up so much graphical power because it still needs to be on a handheld. They can't have this thing just run out in 10 minutes, you know? So, yeah, so it's two things. Nintendo is never going to make a super graphically intensive game. That's not their style. And they have to, you know, make sure that whatever graphics the games have don't just kill the battery that fast. So, yeah, it's not going to happen. Yeah, he goes, I was looking forward to that. No, never, ever. Oh, what the fuck just happened now? By the way, people, I hope you guys are still here. Yeah, we can. We've been having some fucking issues with OBS all night. So if the picture goes out, sorry about that. But you can still hear us, so that's good. I'm not dealing with the shit during the fucking show. Trying to fix this shit. Okay. If you, and I fell into this camp too. If you were waiting for Nintendo to make graphically intensive games like Xbox and PS5, if you are holding your breath, you're going to die because that's never going to happen. This is Nintendo, you know? So, yeah, don't ever think that. And, you know, and shout out to Brett, who's not here right now. You know, he also wants that, too. He wants a very powerful, beefy Nintendo console. The last time we got that was the GameCube. And after that, Nintendo said, we're not doing this anymore. You know, Nintendo used to be about that life. Super Nintendo, N64, GameCube, very powerful systems, right? After that, especially after GameCube, I know you people loved it, but it bombed, right? Then they're like, no, we're not doing this shit. So yeah, don't expect that. They're not going to blow the budgets. And also, I want to bring this up, and I brought this up before. During the pandemic, right, Every fucking game company went on a hiring because they were getting so much money, everybody went crazy. You know who didn't go crazy? Nintendo. They got all that extra money coming in. They were like, all right, we're going to keep doing what we always been doing, you know? And they made well off of that. You didn't hear Nintendo firing anybody, right? Because they weren't crazy like other people. And, like Chris said, go ahead.
And if they do expand their roster, they bring in a lot of people under contract.
Yeah.
Which those contracts expire in a year. So if a year takes a downswing, contract's not renewed, right? So they're not, and they don't technically fire anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. He says, if the next Pokemon game looks like the last Pokemon game, I'm going to lose it, bro. Don't expect it to look that much better. It's going to look better just because it's on better hardware, but don't expect it to be photorealistic Ash Ketchum and shit like that. Mm-hmm. It's going to look like a Pokemon game, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, don't expect that. And Blitz, you always say this too. Don't expect Nintendo to do what the other guys do because they don't do that. They do their own thing, you know? All right, so moving on here, another one. This one's an interesting question. As some outlets drop their PS5 Pro reviews, I'm seeing a few of the scores being discounted lowered because of the console's price. I'm not sure how the price of the console equates to its function, but my question is, should video games be reviewed similarly? A couple of things here. Video games at most cost $70, right? That's actually kind of the standard now. So it doesn't kind of make any sense to, we're going to lower the score of this game because that's a high price. Doesn't make any sense. And here's the thing. You need to, if you're scoring stuff, and I'm speaking right now as a person who reviews hardware, these are consumer products, right? That means people have to buy them. So you have to take into account how much they cost. There's been a bunch of computers I've reviewed that are fucking amazing, right? But if the shit costs $4,000, I got to ding it for that. That's expensive, you know? I'm not speaking of the quality of it, right? And if you read a lot of these PS5 Pro reviews, every single one of them said, this console is incredible. This is the best PlayStation ever. Every single one of them says that. But if you're being honest with your readers, you have to ding it for being expensive. It's a consumer product, you know? And video games... they are, but they're not hardware, you know? And again, most games are $70 anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. There is not like there's a bunch of $40 games out there. There's some, but not a lot. So you can't hold hardware to the same standards as software. Two different things. You know, with software, specifically video games, you really come down to how much fun are people going to have with this game? How much time are they going to be able to invest in it? And is all of those things worth their time, you know? But the price itself, that doesn't really factor in. But when it comes to hardware, you have to factor in price. With a consumer product, you absolutely have to. So I don't think people are unjustified for, you know, bringing it down like a point because of that, you know? J-Step goes... reviewing based on price. No, you're not reviewing based on price. Price is a factor. These guys are, you got to take the review. If you read the reviews, they talk about the design, the performance, the graphics, the game library. All of that is taken into account. It's not, you're not basing it off of price. They're not doing that. If they was just based off of price, it'd be three paragraphs long just talking about the price, you know? Like that doesn't happen with toasters, washing machines. Those are different things, bro. You know, this is an entertainment system. But yeah, that's my take on it. What do you guys say? Is price a factor? I don't want to sound like an asshole. He asked me, is price a factor in the tech industry? What did I just say 5 minutes ago? When I'm reviewing a tech product, I have to counter in the price. I have to account for it. Yes, of course, televisions. You have to take that into account, bro. Like, look at any TV review. You have to take that into account. Why do you think websites have literally best budget TVs? People look for that stuff, you know? There is not a single tech product I can think of that you don't factor in price. Again, if you're reviewing a consumer product, you have to think about the price because people are buying these things or supposed to buy these things. And if you have a fucking TV that's cost $4,000, you're not going to ignore that, you know? That's going to be a big deal, you know? Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I mean, I think you nailed it. And yep. I mean, I'm minded of this. I'm currently thinking about getting a new television.
Yeah.
And then I have to weigh out the, well, you know, what kind of size I want, probably 65 inch, but do I get like an OLED like you got? Do I get the QLED, which is a little bit cheaper? I mean, if I didn't care about fidelity, right, I would just get a standard LED, you know, which would be way cheaper, right? So, and I would look at reviews, like your reviews or whatever, and say, okay, what's the best TV on a budget? Okay, this Samsung or this LG or whatever, or Panasonic, and you just do go with that. But yeah, that definitely you know, factors in. There's whales who don't care, right? They'll buy a $5,000 television, you know, every 2 years for the Super Bowl. Like, they don't care. But you know, a lot of other people, they have to factor that in, and so that should factor into reviews of the product too. And, yeah. And Tony's right. I never see just a one like best electronic product, whatever it is. There's always like best on a budget, best you know, the best like for any price, you know, and middle road, you know. That's why they always have tiers. Even when you shop for even a pre-made laptop or whatever, there's like the gaming professional one, the budget one, the business one, right? Because everyone has different needs and it has different costs associated with it.
Okay, Jason, I know you're not trying to be an asshole, and I hope you don't think I'm being one either, because I'm just kind of confused by this. So he also says, I've never heard of a reviewer bringing up prices in TVs. What reviews are you reading, dude? Like, I work for a website called Tom's Guide. We review TVs. We will absolutely ding a TV if it's way too expensive for what it offers. You know, like any good reviewer will do that. Like maybe these fucking influencers on YouTube won't do that, you know, but a credible fucking reviewer will, you know? Yeah. J-Shep, you already know, brother. We good. I've never seen this. It's a good Samsung TV, but it costs too much. Okay. That's a bad reviewer then. That's a bad reviewer if they don't say that shit, you know? We do it all the time. When I don't review TVs, I review monitors. I will absolutely ding it for costing too much fucking money. You know? You have to. If you're not doing that, you're doing a disservice to your reader. That is a bad reviewer if you're not bringing that up, you know? So, yeah, there you go. So, yeah, PS5, a Pro being $7, yes. It absolutely is a factor, you know? It is not speaking on the quality of the product. Again, if you read the reviews, they will tell you this is the best PlayStation console ever, but it costs $700, you know? All right. Yep. Manny, you got anything to interject?
No, I mean, you said it all right there, man.
Yeah. All right, there we go. Moving on. Shout out to Ace Ali, who is sponsoring two of J-Shep's other questions. So shout out to him, you know? All right, first up, I've seen a discussion lately about streamers being able to stream full games with no copyright restrictions. In other media, books, movies, songs, etc., there are copyright restrictions in place. Knowing everything that is at stake with streaming full games, should there be a copyright restriction on how much of a game can be streamed online? Negatives being seeing the game's ending and climax of the game. All right, so books, movies, songs, what do they have in common that games don't have? They're not interactive. If you download a movie, you download a song, even a book, you're getting the entire experience, just like if you would have bought it for real. If you watch a game stream, you're not getting that same experience because you're not actually playing it yourself, right? Maybe if you have a game that's like completely narrative-based and there are no choices whatsoever, sure. But video games are by their nature interactive, right? So streaming an entire game, you're not gonna go, oh, I just saw that whole stream, I'm not gonna buy it. Think about it like this. What if I watch somebody stream Street Fighter? You know, that's like, I'm not gonna go, oh fuck, I don't need to buy Street Fighter now, I'm good. You know, like it's a different thing. So the whole, I'm actually curious who is actually discussing this in a serious manner, because, and you know me, bro, you know I keep it real. That's a fucking stupid argument to be even having. Like, oh, you shouldn't have game streams because copyright infringement. It's free advertising for fucking games, bro. All those streams out there, every single time like a big time streamer starts playing some shit, blows up. Sea of Thieves is fucking dead in the water, mind the pun, until some fucking big-ass streamer decided to start streaming it. Free fucking publicity. The game blew up. So this is why, for the most part, except Nintendo, you know, most developers don't care because it's free publicity. And the experience that the streamer has would be way fucking different than what you're having. Even if, yes, maybe you'll get the same cinematics or whatever for the end, the beginning and the end or whatever, the shit in the middle, very different, very different. You know, and again, with some cases, stream Tekken, it's a way different, you know, than you actually playing it. So I think those people are fucking morons. They're fucking stupid having that dumbass conversation. Who said that shit? You know, dumbasses. What do you guys say about that?
Having like the bar on content. Like, I mean, you don't want to spoil the game, especially if it's the product. And for the most part, even when it comes to regular media, it's like that too. When it, you know, like you said, it's like with films and movies and stuff like that, you know, they can't spoil those things right away, you know?
Yeah. But it's the interactive thing. I'm like, the fact that games are interactive instantly makes them different than a movie. If you download a movie, you watch it once, you're good. You don't need to buy it. You really don't. You got the whole experience. With a game, if you watch somebody stream the game, you're not getting the same experience. It is very different.
No, you're definitely getting a spectator experience. But at the same time, I think when it comes to, you know, people watch those streams, I feel like a lot of people tend to, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, getting a better sense of a game. I think a lot of times having, you know, watching those games for a lot of people also sells a person on it too.
Free advertising. It really is.
Yeah.
You know? Piracy is a worse thing for video games than streams. Streams are, you know, streams for a lot of people, they're more reliable than a game review. You actually see somebody actually playing it, you know? So
yeah, you get to see somebody demoing it for a full experience if you decide to watch the whole thing. But yeah, I can see it, you know, again, like being spoilers and stuff like that, which can be an issue, you know. But some people just
you have to choose to watch it.
You have to choose. Like, I was just about to say that.
Yes, exactly. It's not like they're forcing you to watch.
Yeah. I don't think there should be copyright restrictions on that. If a lot of these guys too are either sponsored or whatever, so they'll stream the full game. If the publishers didn't want them, or the developers didn't want them to stream it, they wouldn't offer them deals. They offer them deals to do that. They offer them free copy or whatever. So there's that kind of going on in the background, and at the same time, like Tony said, you're not getting the full experience watching that stream, right? Yeah. There could be multiple endings. There could be, if it's a fighting game, you're not experiencing anything. You just watch somebody fight. You don't know how it feels to play it. You may go, hey, I want to try that. I want to do what he's doing on the screen. And you buy it and you'll do it. So it's kind of good advertising. I think a copyright restriction would kill that. The industry would be cutting off its nose to spite its own face.
Exactly. It wouldn't make any fucking sense. Yeah. 100% agree with you on there. All right, moving on. Another sponsor question here. This one's kind of interesting, and I want to give a shout out quick before it could, because it does relate to this actor. Shout out to Tony Todd, man. Passed away. You know, great actor, fantastic. Yeah. I was watching clips of him, you know, as Kern, Bors brother.
Yeah.
You know, that's man, great. so good. So shout out to Tony Todd, Candyman. Yeah. You know, and Tony Todd was one of those guys, bro. He was in everything. You know, it's like you rewatch some old 80s movies, 90s. Oh shit, there's Tony Todd. There's Tony Todd.
Yep.
Love it, man.
I hear he even said it. He actually recorded a lot more Venom lines than what was in the game.
And segue, because that's what the question's about. Actor Tony Todd passed away over the weekend. May he rest in greatness. I like that. Todd was the voice of Venom in Spider-Man 2 on PlayStation. Do you think his health played a role in Spider-Man 2 not having the Venom DLC like the leak suggested? Is that what the leak said? Like, here's my question. Did people know Tony Todd's health was in decline?
No, from what I know, no.
Yeah, I didn't ever even heard of that. So I don't think, so I don't think like the DLC was cut off prematurely because of his health, because I don't think anybody knew about his health. Correct me if I'm wrong about that. But, you know, us three, we know Tony Todd. We like him. We haven't heard anything. So I don't think that really affected things, you know? Yeah. All right. So there you go. Okay. Let's get into it, people. To make it himself, Chris asked you if you could have Sony's financials ready.
Yes.
And also, and Jay Shep also has a question about it, but I'll ask the question after you finish. So
okay.
I will leave it to you, sir.
Good, good. Okay, yeah. Let me share my screen here.
Financials, let's fucking go.
All right, let me know if that.
Yep, there we go.
That's working. Okay, so yeah, I took a look at the Q2 2024 report that Sony just released recently, and there's some pretty interesting stuff. I feel like I've made this joke multiple times when I look at Sony's a big company, right? Has many segments: music, pictures, financial. They call it. There was the electronics section, but they call it entertainment, technology, and services, imaging. They have all these segments, right? But I always joke, like, PlayStation's carrying the rest of it on its back. That's more true now than when I made the jokes. I used to make the jokes, because it used to be a quarter of the revenue, or a little more than a quarter. Yo, this report, it's more than a third.
That's wild.
Of their revenue, right? And I found it hilarious, because I looked and I was joking with Tony. Now, the financial services had a hit, but I don't look at that stuff because that's a completely Japanese service that Sony offers. They offer life insurance and shit over in Japan. So I don't really pay attention to that because that doesn't affect markets here in Europe or anywhere else. But, you know, Sony Pictures and Sony Music, all that stuff is here too. So, you know, I'm kind of curious. And the only segment that we would look at outside of PlayStation that took a hit was Sony Pictures. and I was like, I can't put a figure on it. I mean,
wonder why.
I was like, well, you know, you have hits like Madam Web. Like, what? What's the problem?
I don't get it. Yeah, but Madam Web, America's number one movie that came to streaming the following month. Yeah, great.
Yeah. So, this quarter, PlayStation's doing incredibly well. As a matter of fact, I converted this to U.S. dollars. So year over year, they were at $6.24 billion in net sales Q2 last year. So this time last year.
Yeah.
And they're at a little over $7 billion this year. So that's a 12.3% increase. So you have... let me pull up.
I'm sorry, I had to laugh when I just saw the Sony Pictures one. A down 11%.
Oh, yeah, down 11%. Yep.
Womp,
yeah.
Womp.
It's even worse for them. Like the forecast is lowered for them because I didn't even think about this. They had to deal with the writer's strike. So yeah. Sony Television took a huge hit because of the writer's strike. So that's what they blamed it on, but their film revenue too is not good. So they got problems there. But you know, we only care about PlayStation, so I'm gonna analyze what's going on with Sony Pictures. So they said that they attributed the success this quarter to increase in sales of non-first-party game software titles, including add-on content. So I'll show you those numbers in a second, but they did have an increase on software sales year over year. Impact of foreign exchange rates, they always like the yen and the is kind of devaluing, so the foreign exchange rates is favorable in that case for them. But I'm not looking at that too hard. PS Plus had a big boost. I guess they boosted their active monthly users by about 10 or 11 million since last year. So that's big. And I guess those people are making more purchases or maybe buying higher tiers of PS Plus. I don't know. It's not clear from the report what exactly it is, but they said increase in sales from network services and mainly PlayStation Plus. Operating income and adjusted operating income said it had a significant improvement in hardware profitability because the consoles, as they go along, they get cheaper to make, right? The PS5 that you might buy in the store now is not the PS5 like the original one that Tony or myself or Manny has right now in our house. Like, they change the boards, they make revisions, you know, quietly to reduce cost. Right, but they keep the price the same, so therefore it's more profitable to put it out. Now their hardware sales are down. That's the fourth bullet point on the sales. I should have went into that before. Decrease in sales and hardware due to decrease in unit sales. I mean, that's obviously it's like that's kind of redundant.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you sold less PlayStations, yeah.
You sold less PlayStations because you sold less PlayStations. Sounds like Kamala Harris wrote that shit, you know? Anyway, go on.
Yeah. So they the boost mainly comes from increase in active monthly active users on PS Plus and software sales. So that it did pretty well for them. That most of their profitability came from that. And even though they had a hit from lower hardware sales, I guess they've been able to reduce costs in producing the system, so it kind of offset that a bit. So they're doing a lot better, and over 12.3% boost year over year. You know, is you know, nothing to sneeze at. You know, considering you see almost a significant decrease in Sony Pictures year over year. So it's like, yeah, for the audio listeners, I'll just read this. So this quarter, in the current report, PlayStation accounts for 35.1% of the entire company's revenue. Wow. That's huge. That's over a third.
It's crazy.
Right? The next biggest segment for them is actually entertainment technology and services. That encompasses the televisions and any other electronics Sony makes. That's the next biggest one. The next is imaging and cameras. Next is music. And then Sony Pictures. And then other would involve the financial services and any other things they offer, which is exclusively in the Asian market. But yeah, PlayStation is the biggest segment, and it's doing very well. Now, you would think I would say, like, hey, everything's coming up Milhouse for Sony. You're doing great. But here's the thing. This report ends, at the end of September, right? So this doesn't account for, like, the failure of Concord and, any other things that happen. What was it called? Fair Play? What's the next, like, thing? The next game? The next Sony IP? That doesn't look too good.
Okay. You mean that's coming up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's coming up before the holiday.
Yeah. If you guys could tell us in the chat, let us know. And I also don't think Craven's going to help, you know, Sony Pictures.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. The Sony Pictures, I don't think it's
going to get all this bump. Fair games, Chris.
Fair games, yeah. That doesn't look too good. I already joked about that with Rich on the show. Like, that is not looking good. But Sony did up their fiscal year projections based on the performance of games and network services. So they are pretty bullish on their sales overall, despite, I don't know overall how much of a hit Concord makes to the bottom line. It has to be a big one, though, I would think.
Yeah, if reports are true about it costing anywhere between $200 to $400 million, it's going to take a bite. It's going to take a bite for sure.
So that, I would think, they would have... Well, I mean, when this forecast was made, to be fair,
Was this before Concord?
No, this was actually, I have to correct myself. Concord was in July.
Okay.
It was in late July, and it failed in late July, and only was up 10 days.
Yeah, less than 2 weeks.
All right, so maybe I'm mistaken, because, like, I was crunching these numbers, and I was thinking, oh, maybe this doesn't take into effect Concord, but maybe it does. Cumulative effect of Concord will ripple through the fiscal year, but maybe this quarter was just such a boon for them that it's not really an impact.
Yeah, okay, that's something we'll have to keep an eye on then.
Yeah, they shut down two studios, but that was recent. Would be after this report. Firewalk, and I forgot the name of the other one.
Yeah, Neon Koi, it's called?
Neon Koi, yes. Yeah, so they're still shuttering studios, but even with that, they're bullish on the projections for sales and operating income from PlayStation, which here is, they call it games and network services. I'm just going to call it PlayStation. They're bullish on those prospects. They actually increased their sales projection for the end of the fiscal year. So we'll see how that works out.
Hey, Chris, Concord came out on August 23rd, just so you know.
Okay, it came on August 23rd, and it shut down when, September?
Yeah, like 10 days after that,
10 days after that. Okay, so it would be in here, but maybe I will pay attention in the next report for sure, in Q3, because I would expect that bite to either have been in here, or I was thinking of being the next report in Q3. And they can still adjust their forecast. Just like I said with the Nintendo report, they didn't adjust their operating income or anything, but they're waiting to see how the holidays are.
Yeah.
I think Sony is waiting for the same thing. You'll see how your holiday numbers are. December 31st will end Q3 for them, and then they'll adjust, right, their projections. Although it'll be kind of late, because like, you're just counting like the 3 months till March 31st, and you know, it's kind of late to forecast down from there, because investors are paying attention early on, and then to shift focus and then shift their investments at that late stage might be difficult. So we'll see. But Sony overall doing very well, and especially PlayStation. PlayStation is doing quite well, despite all the hang-ups and the, you know, the Jim Ryan curse and everything. They're doing quite well.
That's good. And here's the question.
They also did. Oh, go ahead. How many studios did they close in that time? They closed down that one London studio. They closed that one down, and then.
I mean, this year overall.
I think this needs to. Manny, you mean this year or this quarter?
This quarter.
Okay, the quarter we're talking about.
Oh, the quarter we're talking about didn't have any closures. Firewalk and Neon Koi was. When was it? And it was in October. That was after. Right?
Yeah. It was like.
Yeah, so it's after this.
What about the other closure? The one for the one that Jim Ryan showed up in the studio.
Yeah, that was in the
that was a week later.
This report Springer is after that. Yeah. This report would be after that.
Okay.
Yeah. And also closing those studios and reconciling that stuff actually boosts their operating income, right? Because their expenditures go down. Right when they shutter a studio and they cut all the overhead, so it looks good on numbers. It just sucks, like, you know, that's people's jobs and everything is getting tossed out. Mm-hmm. I also did a half year report, and I thought it was fair to look at the half year over year summary, because that's how Nintendo did their report. They didn't do a Q2 report like everyone else does. They did a 6 month, a half year perspective. So I figured, all right, I'm just going to do apples to apples. And Sony, thankfully, I love their reports. They already did this, so I just broke down the numbers. So that was great. So the half year also looks very good for them. Looking at the 6 months in this fiscal year versus last year, they're up 12.21%. So it's $11.3 billion in revenue in the first half of 2023. Now it's at 12.68 billion for the first half of 2024. So that's an increase of 12.21%. Every segment besides financial and Sony Pictures was up over here. Imaging went up quite a bit. I'm wondering if they made some sort of deal. I should look at the. You know, I'm trying to pay attention to gaming. I'm not looking at all the segments. So what the heck did imaging do? Increase in unit sales. Sales to who? Anyway, they did well. Let me not get off track. But I was like, 27%, what did they do? Looking at the half year over year, PlayStation is doing tremendously well, actually increasing, even though in the half year report, and I did the quarterly report last time, hardware was down. Hardware sales are down, and they're still down, but they're still, like, with software and network, they're still doing very well. So, you know, that's good for them.
Yeah. So here's a question from Jay Shep that he asked you. Do you see any statistics that are positive for Sony but negative for gamers that might come back to bite gamers in the future? An example would be PS5 Pro prices not affecting sales.
Negative for gamers. Well, that will depend. There's going to be plenty of people who are getting into PS5 now, so they may purchase a Pro. I don't know, honestly, how that will do for hardware sales, because their hardware sales are trending down. They already said themselves that the PS5 is in its twilight years.
Yeah.
So, you know, they are probably already in R&D and heavy stuff for PS6 at this point. So it might continue to trend down. They'll have a honeymoon period. That quarter when the PS5 Pro is on sale and launches, there'll be a honeymoon. And then it'll drop back down, right? You'll get a burst of sales from early adopters and whales and tech guys and whatnot. and influencers and all these guys. And then it will drop back down. Once they have that in their hand, most other people, like, I'm sticking with my PS5. I'm not buying a PS5 Pro. And a lot of people will budget it in and go, you know, do I really need it? No. I'd rather get a new TV right now than a PS5 Pro because I need the TV.
Yeah.
TV's
a better investment, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. Even though you're not investing, but you know what I mean. Here's something I wanted to bring up because, again, Jay Shep, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is what I think the question is asking. It seemed to me like the question was asking, is the high price of the PS5 Pro going to negatively affect Sony? No, because it's not going to, that console is only exists as a supplement. It's not made to be the main driver. The main driver is the PS5, you know, the $500 one, the $440, the $450 one without the disc drive. That is the main driver. Just like with the PS4 Pro, the PS5 Pro will, in the end, probably account for 10% of console sales by the end of it. It is not meant to be a driver at all, you know?
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind.
Exactly.
Yeah. Another thing real quick, Sir Air Force, he goes, Xbox sales report will be the easiest report. Xbox Game Pass sales are up. Xbox hardware down. Thank you for coming. Actually, Sir Air Force, you may not know this, we actually stopped doing Microsoft reports because they bury all the gaming shit so you can't even parse it out, you know?
Yeah.
So, Chris, you could tell the story, but explain to people who may not know why we stopped, because we used to do them, you know? But, yeah, so explain to them why we no longer do them.
Microsoft makes it very difficult. In their financial report every quarter, it's like 50, 60 pages of information. They prioritize everything by revenue. So like the beginning pages will be Enterprise, Azure, Windows support, Windows, Office, all that stuff. Way down in the report, like somewhere buried on page 35 will be Xbox. And it won't be called Xbox. Like I really have to look for this shit. And they always rename it. And I swear it's like the redheaded stepchild of Microsoft because it's just buried in the report. They don't give it I think the last time it was a page of information.
Wow.
I read these Sony reports. You can see this, like, here's the handout. This is the supplemental handout. This isn't even the full report. The full report for Sony is way bigger, but they give everything equal weight, right? And what's at the top of every chart I show you? Games and network services, right? Because it impacts the company the most. They don't prioritize it by, like, whatever they feel like or shit. Microsoft only cares about like enterprise stuff. They're now into AI, Windows, Office services, and those things. I swear Xbox does not even get close to equal weight in terms of reporting from them. So I constantly have to dig into the numbers, look up stuff. It's just a pain in the ass to do their report. So I just, you know, we agreed. Tony agreed to just stop looking for it.
It makes no sense. You know, it's just too much work. You know, whereas, like, you know, Sony and Nintendo, they do a great job. So basically, if Microsoft doesn't care, why should we care? You know, that's the way I see it. All right, man. Thanks as always, Chris, for that. Very interesting stuff. And we did the main ones, Nintendo and Sony. So I'm guessing by the end of the year or the beginning of the year, we're going to get more financials. Like, what's
the about one? The end of January.
Yeah.
They should have another call, right? So the end of January or the beginning of February, I'll do reports for Nintendo and Sony. And then again, we'll do this again in May after the last call.
That's going to be the interesting year. One. Yeah. That's
May one. Yeah. So beginning of May. Look forward to that one.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's move on. Speaking about Assyrian Air Force, he has a couple questions here for us. So first one is, will Xbox, PlayStation, or Nintendo ever permanently drop the price of their current gen systems? Nope.
That's never going to happen.
Think about it like this, right? I'm going to start with Nintendo first, and Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. Nintendo is about to have a new console probably next year. Nintendo usually completely discontinues the previous model. They don't even let it linger that long, right? So there's no point for them to lower the price of the Switch. Switch is probably going to be done by next year, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Chris?
No, I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing went off the market faster than the Wii U.
Yeah.
The Wii U, they made that disappear, right? You couldn't even buy a Wii U. Even before the Switch launched, if you went holiday and decided, hey, I'm going to get a Wii U, you couldn't find it because they pulled it from the points of purchase. They pulled all the units,
yeah,
right? I don't know what they did with them. They just buried them. But with the Wii also, once it was cut off, once they went to the Wii U, you couldn't find a Wii. They made like that half-assed fucking digital-only Wii.
Yeah.
It was stupid. But once the Switch successor is out, the Switch, you will not find a Switch. Switch OLED, forget it. You'll have to go secondhand or on eBay if you want one. They'll make it disappear. So
yeah, that's done. Sony is making way too much money, as Chris just showed, to lower the price of the console. They have no incentive to. They are currently the leader. No reason to lower their console price at all, right? So that's not going to happen. And with Xbox, there's no point. Like, no one's buying the system, and they know if they lower the price, no one's going to care anyway. So may as well just leave it at the same price for the people that are still interested. So yeah, this generation, you're not going to see price drops, permanent price drops. You may see the occasional one, obviously. Black Friday is coming, people, so look up, be on the lookout for that. You will see price drops. Permanent ones? No. Especially for Nintendo. The Switch is going to be gone by next year. You know, they're going to just focus on the new system. And Sony's making too much money. They're good, you know? If Sony was going to drop the price of the system, they would have done it when the PS5 Pro dropped. They didn't do that. But they did it with the PS4 Pro. They lowered the price of the previous system, right? They didn't do it this time because they have no, because there's no competition. They have no reason to, you know? All right. Another one from a certain Air Force. Will other companies follow Nintendo's example of suing? You know how Nintendo sued Palworld. So he's wondering, will other companies do the same petty suing shit? I don't think so. This is a Japan thing too. This lawsuit's happened in Japan. It's not happening worldwide. So I don't think other companies are going to be like, you know, like, I don't think Sega's going to be like, hey, we're suing Bandai Namco for stealing 3D fighting games. Like, that's not going to happen. It's just Nintendo being petty, you know?
Yeah, and they've always been petty. Yep. They have a history of this shit. And we've talked about this a ton on Throwdown. Like, I brought up examples. Tony's brought up examples. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could go back to the 80s. You could go back to Galoob. You could go back to Blockbuster Video. I mean, I talked about Nintendo paying for legislation in the U.S. to try to make video game rentals illegal. Right? They went that far. Right? So that history is there. Sony doesn't really have a history of it. Like, if you talk about the Activision thing, them trying to block it, that they wanted Activision not to be in Microsoft's hands. But that's two juggernauts fighting, right? So I never heard of Sony going after a bar or a local community person for doing some PlayStation IP charity or anything like that. Nintendo's done that. You know, so you won't hear those things. I never heard of Sony. What, even though they, you know, and Brett would say, well, they do fucking anti-consumer things or whatever. Yeah, we could argue about that. But I never seen Sony litigiously go after the little guy for some kind of like small copyright thing or whatever. They don't care. They're looking at bigger things. Nintendo will go after anyone.
Yeah.
And everyone. So, yeah, I don't think anyone will do that. You look at examples of cases with companies, it's usually against another company or some kind of patent infringement or copyright infringement. And that makes sense, right? You're trying to protect your IP. You could go all the way back. Capcom sued Data East for Fighter's History because it was too close to Street Fighter 2, right? Capcom's not suing a little guy for trying to make a fighting game. It's like a big arcade maker going, hey, these characters have the same freaking moves, right? So that's, you know, that's what you'll see. From Nintendo, you'll see that you run the gamut. Them suing, bringing the hammer down on Emu Paradise, right?
Yeah.
With ROMs. Or the guy who tried to do the Pokemon charity at his bar, and they screwed the shit out of him. They put a guy in jail for rooting the Switch. He got like 18 months? And he owes them like, what, $10 million?
That's
ridiculous. Yeah.
Nintendo, man, no, they don't fuck around, dude, you know. But yeah, no other company is as petty as Nintendo. Like, they are the kings of pettiness. So yeah, don't expect that to happen with other and again, like we said, this thing's only happening in Japan. It's not happening anywhere else. All right, next up, got a couple questions here from Mr. Cuban Boss. First one, this one's kind of fun. I wish I could answer it fully, but it's still a fun question. Did anyone on the panel ever play Tao Fang Fist of the Lotus on the original Xbox. It was one of my favorite fighting games of that generation, but people either have never played it or know that John Tobias created it. It's a highly underrated game with dope combos, characters with specific martial arts styles, and battle damage on characters when matches end. Okay, I'm just going to jump to Chris first, because you had the original Xbox. Did you ever play Tao Fang?
No, I didn't. This is the first I've heard.
Oh, okay. So let's bring it back. A little, you know, time for a segment. You know, we got to talk about fighting games again. Yes, admittedly, I never played Tao Fang, but it was one of the staple, I call it X-Play games. They used to review the fuck out of this game all the time. And it wasn't that they read a lot. It was just like, because they always kept re-ranning the same fucking episode. So I would always see the review of Tao Fang. I knew about it. I was like, oh shit, Tanja. Because remember before that, our joke was like, what the fuck happened to John Tobias? Like that dude was just missing for years, you know? I think like after Mortal Kombat 3, it's like, where's John Tobias? You know? And we'd always like we inside joke stuff with what John Tobias was up to in our little group. But yeah, so the game, you know, I don't know what it looks like now. Like, I don't know what it looks like, you know, to me now watching it if I were to watch old clips. But I remember back then, it should look fucking amazing. Remember the original Xbox had really nice graphics. Like, probably like, yeah, it was the most powerful console of that time. It was Xbox, GameCube, and PS2, like in that order of like powerfulness. Tao Fang looked dope. I remember all the cool martial arts stuff. And I do remember the battle damage that people would incur. I think it was even like part of the gameplay too. It was like, oh shit, you can't do this move now because your arm's fucked up. That's kind of cool, you know? But I never played it. I never owned the original Xbox. I had a friend who had an Xbox, but he didn't buy that. And Manny, did you ever play or see Tao Fang?
I've seen Tao Fang, but I never played it because I didn't own an Xbox.
Yeah.
I'm sure Adam would probably know that a little bit.
yeah, he would.
He is the Xbox.
Yeah. So yeah,
especially
Chris.
That era.
Yeah. So Chris, this game was kind of meant to be like the other Mortal Kombat because it was by John Tobias, but obviously you never heard of it for a reason. You know.
Yeah.
They only made one. That was it. That's all you got. One Tao Fang. You know. But that's cool, man. All right, another one from Mr. Cuban Boss. I wish Brett was here. For this one. Fallout London is amazing and probably the best Fallout experience since New Vegas. The team honestly has bested even Bethesda at its own game. And once it's properly set up and modded, it runs great. Is anyone on the panel interested in trying it out at some point? Nope, I'm good. You know, for you guys who don't know, Fallout London is a fan-made thing. Correct me if I'm wrong about that, but that's not official. You know, it's a fan-made project. That's like in the spirit of New Vegas. But, you know, here's the thing, being diplomatic, I respect anyone, you know, I respect modders. I respect what they do. I think it's cool that they, you know, are able to make their own game. I mean, we've gotten games off of modders, like fucking, didn't Counter-Strike start as a mod basically?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So right. Yeah. So a lot of respect to people who do that. I just personally do not indulge in fan-made projects. I'd rather get something official. If it becomes official, might be a different story. But me personally, and also I just don't really care to play Fallout right now. I think the game is still being worked on, but I'm not in a Fallout frame of mind at the moment anyway. So me personally, I'm not interested. I would have loved to hear what Brett would have to say. But yeah, what about you, Chris? I know you like Fallout too as well.
I do like Fallout, but... I mean, my time for games is limited, and B, I would have to set up this mod. Like, I think you need a copy of New Vegas and a whole bunch of other shit installed to get it to work. And I'm just, you know, I'm the Danny Glover line from Lethal Weapon. I'm getting too old for this shit. You know, I just need this shit to launch. I don't feel like tinkering with it. And I'm sure they did a great job. I love a lot of mods. I like little small mods, like, you know, fun stuff in Resident Evil, like costumes and stuff. I'll do those packs. Or like turn Mr. X into Thomas the Tank Engine. That's stupid shit. I love that.
I like seeing stuff like that.
Yeah, but this is big. And then to get into a whole other Fallout game, I ain't ready for that juice anymore.
Yeah. Manny, I know you're not interested, obviously, but what do you think of this project? you know? And the reason I'm asking you is that is because, you know, of how you kind of feel about that whole Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite Maximilian dude. So you're like, yo, you got to be careful, dude, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, I think I understand that fans enjoy a property to where they want to, you know, sort of, you know, make a, like a thing, you know, make something that adds to it or is a new chapter in it, because apparently, because the obviously the main game creators can't do, you know, are not servicing the fans. But at the same time, I feel like this is a situation where your actual skills could be better used to make an original title. You could have taken a lot of those sorts of those things that they could have taken a lot of those story bits and all that other stuff and created their own world instead of just, you know, attaching it to an existing franchise. But again, you know, they probably feel differently than I do of that than that. But I feel like, why not just do that? Like, why not go down the line, build a, you know, a game in the same vein as the Fallout games? Because obviously those games don't seem to exist, do they? Right.
Yeah. And the ones that have been coming out haven't been to people's liking. You know,
they haven't been to people's liking. A lot of these people who know Fallout in and out, they know how the game works. They know how everything goes in it. So why not make another post-apocalyptic world where these different, where this that takes place in London? Does it different? For the Maximilian dude thing, I think it's obviously it's for the fans, you know, because the fans really enjoy, you know, it's really cool to do that sort of stuff. But again, like, you know, as somebody who's fallen in that pit of, you know, getting a cease and desist before, it's not fun, you know, and you're just doing something because you just love something and you just get this shit thrown at you. And cease and desist are, you know, again, one thing about all that stuff is it's within a company's right to squash anything yep. like that, because, you know, people have this misconception. Oh, I'm not making money. I'm not doing this. No, anything that you do based on any sort of property, the company who owns that property has it within their rights to serve you with a note and crush whatever you, anything. Doesn't matter if you're making money. It doesn't matter if you're giving it away for free. The biggest thing, the biggest thing is that they don't want it to happen. And you notice a lot of company, like for instance, another sort of fan project, the Silent Hill Enhanced, right? Silent Hill 2 Enhanced, which was a fan project to essentially fix the broken-ass version of Silent Hill 2 that was released on so essentially, you know, cleaning up a lot of the texture issues, running the game at higher resolutions, all that stuff, an intact Silent Hill 2, just running at a better resolution, you know, in very future, and fixing a lot of the, you know, fixing the fog and doing all kinds of stuff. Now, as soon as Silent Hill 2 Remake got announced, or where it was before it was going to drop, they closed down their project. We're done.
Yeah.
Why did they do that? They did that because, you know, I'm not sure, I don't think Konami came after them over it, but in general, companies don't want their properties, want your fan project, whatever the hell that may be, showing up in searches whenever somebody's looking for information about these. So that's part of the reason why I think also Nintendo's also being a little bit heavy-handed in it. Granted, there's no Pokemon game that's out, but they don't want anything if you're doing Pokemon searches, they don't want fucking Palworld to be in there.
Yeah,
that's why they'll throw that at it. But yeah, I think, again, I appreciate all the work that goes into sort of these sort of fan games, but I feel like they should really, their efforts are best suited if they just decided to make, instead of adding on
a game that's inspired by the thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. A spiritual successor or whatever the hell you want to call it, right? You know, there's plenty of, you know, companies, you know, people have done that. Right now, there's a lot of indie independent games that, you know, games used that have made like a Kingdom Hearts likes, right? Games that are pretty much like Kingdom Hearts, but with, you know, with different characters, story, plot, beats and stuff like that. But obviously it's a Kingdom Hearts game. But I feel like you could, that RPG space, that sort of fall, you know, the Bethesda-like RPG space, there's not a lot of games that service that sort of that type of game, except for Bethesda game.
Yeah, true. All right, man, good stuff. All right, Jolly Yellow Nerd, just one question. This one's kind of funny. I know a lot of you don't have much love for Star Wars, much less Star Wars games these days. But would a, and Manny, let me finish this one, but would a modern Star Wars fighting game get your attention? I say modern because I know that Masters of Tereskasi came out on the PS1 and that game should never be talked about. Fuck no, I would not play a Star Wars fighting game, you know? Before, okay, let's just say for the sake of argument, Star Wars is not shit like it is now, right? It was just, if it was, let's just say Star Wars is actually good, right? I would still be highly skeptical of a Star Wars game because of Masters of Tereskasi. But current Star Wars? Nah, bro. No. Nope. Nope. I'm not, I wouldn't even look at it twice. Masters of Tereskasi 2. You know, fuck that. I'm good. I don't think any...
No way.
Yeah, I know, Chris, you don't even give a fuck about Star Wars. So.
No. I'm done. And then any game that they would put out now is going to have these new... fucking planks of wood characters. People want the the OG characters. People want Luke and Han and whatever. They're not going to give you that. They're going to give you
Rey and the Acolyte chick. Like all these fucking.
I couldn't even remember her name. Yeah, the Acolyte chick. Shit.
Yeah.
They're going to give you that bullshit, you know?
Yeah. No, fuck. Oh, no, yes. Even, I didn't even think about the cast. You're right. Oh, yeah. No. No, dead on arrival. That's a certain influencer that we like says dead on arrival. All right, man. Last two questions of the night. Mr. Black Metal Gamer, which current game companies still have many of their original staff versus having a skeleton crew? Okay, Manny, I know you want to jump in on this. I'll let you go next. But here's the thing. A lot of the game companies that you love and remember, they've been around for like 30, 40 years. There's very few of them that still have even one guy. Like, yeah, fucking NetherRealm still has Ed Boon around, sure. But that's a very rare thing, you know? So go ahead, Manny. What's your take on this? Because, you know, we always talk about this. We always tell people, hey, the company that you love isn't run by the same people anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's a rarity if that ever does happen. Those the people that made all your favorite titles are still working at these studios. You see these sequels, but nobody looks at who's making these sequels.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, and you know, to use the Veilguard as an example, none of those people on that Veilguard team, maybe one programmer or somebody like that is still left over. But those are that's it. And I feel like people should start paying attention to teams more than they should. More than they should the brand. Franchise.
Yeah, the franchise. Yeah.
The franchise or the brand.
Yeah.
Because you know, and this is also kind of like, you know, your like basketball team and football teams, right? You know, you'll see or baseball teams. You see people are pissed. You know, they get whenever somebody moves on to a studio, they get a new team. They always get mad and pissy, like, oh, boo, you betrayer. It's like, dude, I was fucking traded.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same sort of thing. It's like these guys, none of these people are, you know, half the people that make these franchises are not even there. They're out somewhere else. And they don't ever, you don't ever hear about what they're doing anymore. Once they've left that coast, once they left that place, they're just gone. I mean, the only one that I've seen, only few that I've seen examples of this who've gone on to make, you know, to make their own studios is Hideo Kojima, right?
Yeah.
What's his face? Itagaki. I mean, not Itagaki. Creator of the producer on Castlevania.
Oh, I know. I'm forgetting his name, but yes, I know.
Kamiya? Kamiya?
No, Castlevania.
Igarashi, right?
Igarashi.
Igarashi. And Toyama, the creator of Silent Hill.
Yeah. Yuji Horii, the guy who created Dragon Quest, he's still around. But think about it. The other two guys that helped them aren't around anymore. They're unfortunately passed away, you know? Kira Toriyama and the composer, you know? And all the guys working under Yuji Horii are probably all young guys, you know?
Yeah. But it's a very rare few of still have an intact. And then when you know, obviously all the guys who made the Team Silent team, they're all spread out all over the place, the exception of probably being at Boca Studios with Toyama. But it's, again, I feel like just keep an eye on who makes your favorite games and see what they're doing now. Especially if you have one of those big old franchises that you love, because I'll bet you most of the time those guys who did those things, like if you look at the revolving door after Corey Barlow, after what's his face, God of War, blanking on.
Jaffe?
Yeah, after David Jaffe, the God of War franchise had a revolving door of directors. But granted, the one thing about the directors of the following God of War games, every single one of them worked on the original game.
Yeah.
So Corey Barlog was an animation guy in the original God of War. Stig was the background guy from God of War and God of War 2. So they still kept it in the family.
Yeah.
And it was still, for the most part, the most of the team that was making was following. With the probably the exception being is God of War 20, God of Boy and God of War 2.
Yeah, but obviously even Corey Barlog, he did Dad of War, the first one. I don't know who directed the second one. I don't know how long he's been on the team.
It was somebody else on the team, but I don't know if they were an original, one of the...
Yeah, Sapo Otaku, man. But yeah, like for your favorite game company, the original teams are not there anymore. They've been around for 30, 40 years, so that's just impossible. Think about it like this, man. The guys who are doing Street Fighter now, they're younger than me and Manny and Chris, That's just how it is, man.
With the exception of some of the content. Some of the artists, yeah. Still left over. But even
I'm talking about the producers. Composed. Like, these guys are either our age or younger. Mm-hmm. It's like, that goes to show you, it's not the same people anymore, They've either moved on or retired in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in time, a lot of those guys are probably in retirement age. Mm-hmm. Kojima just turned 60, right?
Yep. He's in that retirement age, yeah.
He's getting into that retirement age bracket. Same thing with Miyamoto.
Yeah.
And he hasn't made games in years. Hmm. He just comments on them. He's their ambassador, if anything. He hasn't made games in a long time.
Yeah, for sure. All right, man. And the final question of the night. This one's funny. Would you ever play Dragon Age Veilguard if it was free on PlayStation Plus? To quote Richard Bailey Jr., oh, hell no.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
I never played any of Dragon Age. I'm probably not going to start with, even though I'm sure it's like probably with the way they're sort of setting it up, it's like somewhat like a soft reboot.
Yeah, pretty much.
I've never had any interest in the Dragon Age franchise, so.
I do want to say this, and I can say it now because the NDA is lifted. I was offered this game twice to review. I declined both times. So that lets you know right there. But one is because I'm genuinely not interested, and two, and it's because it's true, I was very busy. I had to review the PS5 Pro, people, No time for Dragon Age. But yeah, so as a fan, not interested, and as a reviewer, I had no time. So I actually can answer. It's not a hypothetical for me. I did decline it. Twice. Also very interesting. I've never been asked multiple times if I want to review a game. This is the first time. Very interesting. It's almost as if they wanted more attention for this.
Can you say why they wanted you offering it?
I don't feel
that you can talk about.
I don't feel comfortable talking about it. That's what it is. Right, I probably could talk about it. I just don't feel comfortable talking about it. I lost my train of thought. But yeah, Dragon Age. Oh yeah, that's what it was. Hey Chris, you notice you don't really hear about Dragon Age on Twitter anymore.
No.
Very interesting. Kind of came and went. Meanwhile, when the last game, Inquisition, people were talking about that for a long time. Months,
Yeah. I tell you what, I've seen cuts of some of those cutscenes, some of the story stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I know. No, there's a hard pass.
Yeah, no.
The writing is terrible.
Absolutely atrocious. horrible, Oh, man. All right. It's going to do it for us. I do have a plug here. I will be on the Crashing Game Night podcast on Tuesday. They are celebrating their 300th episode, and they asked me to be on. They actually asked me like months ago. I'm like, all right, bro, I'll be on. Good guys, so I'll be on there at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Just go check out Crashing Game Night on YouTube. My friend Ariel Dannon, a.k.a. Huggable Hipster, will also be on the episode, and we're going to be just talking games and pop culture with the fellas, so stay tuned for that. And obviously, head over to thecoalition.com, Coalition with a K, for all the gaming coverage. Rich is going to have something very cool for you guys I can't talk about, but he was in L.A. for a game preview that you will learn about soon. And I don't know what the status is on The Walking Dead. I think they finished it. So go check out all that stuff over on the Coalition's YouTube channel. Again, Coalition with a K, man. And yeah, man, do you have anything to plug or are you good?
No, man, not great now. there's still stuff in the pipeline, but nothing I can...
All right, good stuff, man. Yeah, yeah, I also have a couple of things.
Go play Slytherin.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I also have a couple of gaming things to talk about soon, so stay tuned. All right, make sure you follow Throwdown Twitch and Twitter. Subscribe to us on YouTube and join the Discord where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. And of course, you can find us on your favorite podcast app. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
And Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
All right, guys. Thursday. Later.
Peace.